The Monday Footy Review with Jimmy Bartel.
Bartel, clever! Brilliant! Unbelievable, actually. Jimmy with a bit of magic.
We love Jimmy's magic. He helps us out on a Monday morning, reflecting on the weekend that was semi-final weekend in the AFL. James, good morning to you.
Morning, Daniel. It's and everybody else. It's put your bike helmets out. It's for the Magpies, you know, the bike helmets with all the little spokey dokies that come out for the swooping. So stand by your pies for Joey. Yeah, put your bike helmets out. Take a photo. Put it on social media. Get behind them and get them to the off season.
Yeah, cable ties everywhere on the helmets today. They'll be up and about, hanging out for you, hang out your helmets. It's good. It's good. It's a nice sentiment, Jim, because our man's going through a bit of pain.
Yeah. It'd be tough. And look, this is always the difficulty now as a list management group. And half, I know you and I have spoken about this a fair bit. And Rama would be great to talk to. Is how much do you weigh up the season on that last performance? Like, you got absolutely touched up, and this always happens. Like, the same happened with the Giants when they got belted in the grand final. Other teams have been beaten convincingly in the finals. How much do you weigh up the last game as what you're missing and what do you need to do to go forward? Or do you, you know, completely ignore that and weigh up the whole entire season as a whole? Because the finals is where it really matters, isn't it?
That is correct. That's why they play.
It's a very good question.
So let's go back before we get to that. Let's go back to Friday night with Richmond and St Kilda. We'll play the same sentiment, Jim. What would St Kilda be reflecting upon today? What's Brett Ratten and co reflecting upon today after the season that was for them? By the way, Jack Steele announced as their Trevor Barker a medalist last night, the best and fairest for the Saints.
Yeah, that was probably the easiest, best and fairest to pick for quite some time. He was absolutely absolutely brilliant. It'd be like after the game, here, Jack, can you just pack the best and fairest? Do they get a medal or a trophy, the Trevor Barker medal?
I think they're all medals these days.
Yeah, take that and the pizza voucher with you, as it used to be at Bell Park. get yourself a free large. Now, I think they're actually, and this is the reason why I raised it, I think they're different conversations between St Kilda and Collingwood, because the Saints, you could just say, well, the game plan was fine. We just didn't have Carlisle, Ryder, Long, actually personnel, because I actually think the Saints' game plan works and they've got the personnel to execute their game plan. They could maybe just add a player or two. You can always add quality to help with your game plan, whereas I think Collingwood, there's still a bit of game system forward of the ball, the way they move the footy, and I don't think that's just a this year issue. It's been an issue for them since they've won the grand final. You go through their players, Thomas, Hoskin Elliott, DeGoey, and I'm missing the other, Stevenson. They're all kicked 40 in the year they made the grand final, and I don't think all four have really hit the height since that grand final year.
No, spot on. I think that's fair. So you're saying St Kilda on the up, and we'll get to the Magpies a little bit later on in more depth, but they're on the way down. But the Saints can be well pleased with what they've been able to achieve in 2020.
I wouldn't say up or down. I'd say the way you'd look at it and the way you'd assess it with the question I asked is whether it was list or game style when you review your season.
I think Jimmy and Rama and Daniel, St Kilda have done a lot of really good things over the last 12 months. And I think even in the final series, the two games they've played, it's almost franked what they've been able to achieve. And I think what they've gone and done is they've gone and got a really good coach who's put in a game plan that works, as you touched on, Jimmy. If you look at their best and fairest, the top three are all relatively new recruits. So it's another example of how that they've got their trading and their list management right. And I think if you look forward as well, is that they've now created an environment and a list that if you were looking at potentially going to a new club, you'd look at that and you think, you know what, they're on the right track. I can see what they're trying to do. So, yeah, they could add, but I reckon they've got a lot of the components pretty good. And it's quite a balanced sort of list. And I thought, guys, on Friday night, while Richmond always seemed to be in control, there was a time there in the third quarter where St Kilda got a little bit close, and you start to think, geez, they're going all right here, the Saints. Richmond haven't quite put them away here. They kept coming, even though they perhaps weren't playing as well as they have at other times during the course of the year. But it seems that they're a team that have got a lot more scope in them.
Yeah, well, they kept pushing on Friday night. Actually, the one that you missed is Gresham, who didn't play for a large part of the season because of that back injury. So he comes in and adds to the midfield and the forward half. But it's a sustainable game plan that St Kilda have, I think, which is what they get out of that season. I think a lot of Saints supporters would have been scratching their heads over previous years, just wondering how they play because of the inconsistency in their performance. Now, inconsistency comes with immaturity as well. So, you know, they're starting to get mature performances now out of Jack Steele, who's a best and fairest winner. Billings, Dougal Howard comes in. So there's a number of guys that are naturally maturing and getting older, and that's why you get consistency in performance. But I actually think St Kilda will be a touch disappointed with Friday night because I never thought they had a period of, 10 minutes, let's call it 15 minutes within that game where they actually got the game on their terms and they were playing with any dash or dare. Richmond seemed to be able to really stifle that type of play. I didn't feel, and this is both finals, I didn't feel like they were, both those finals were at finals intensity. If you compare them to the four games of the previous week, and if you look at the two games of this weekend, it didn't really have the Collingwood Geelong game was over within the first 10 minutes, but I didn't feel the Friday night game. I think the one thing that Brett Ratten would be most disappointed on, he didn't bring the heat. They didn't bring the pressure to Richmond.
But isn't that just I agree with you, but that's just the reality of the fact that the top four were clearly the top four this year.
No doubt.
And if you go to the first week of the finals, the two qualifying finals were really exceptional games of football, and the Bulldogs and Kilda game was close, and the West Coast Collingwood game were close, but there weren't high-quality matches compared to the other two. And then we see this weekend, we thought there may have been a monkey on the back of Geelong because of their finals record. Well, Geelong started well, game over. And Richmond are just a better team. But I do think that St Kilda would take a lot of confidence out of what they did throughout the course of the year.
100% they'll take a lot
enough.
Of confidence.
They're just not good enough to beat the top four.
So the question really is, and they'll be having their list management meetings today, is how do we improve? Now, if you sit on your hands and rely on natural improvement of your list, you'll only get a spike of maybe 5%, 10%. They've got to look at and really analyse, well, what do we actually need to add now? Do we need to try to bring in another player from another club, or do we think we're simply good enough? And that's a question that all clubs will ask.
Well, they got to, one of the things that stood out to me, and Jim, get your take on this too, was the players that they could least afford to lose in the game against Richmond was Paddy Ryder. And of course, he hit that hamstring late in the game against, who did they play in their first week? But the Bulldogs. Turns out to be a pretty nasty outcome for them and their season in that game on Friday night because they got monstered out of the centre. Now, it's not just about the ruck and the tap work. 15-5 out of the centre clearances where stopping around the ground, the Saints had their way, but the centre clearances where they lost all field position. 15-5 is a smacking, let alone in a semi-final.
Rammer, I thought you're going to jump in there, Rammer. But
you go first, Jim. I want to just touch on something else with Paddy Ryder after you, Jim.
Yeah. Well, they lost their point of difference, didn't they? Really, it was the two ruck combo, the two-headed monster, which two legitimate ruckmen. We're not talking about that big banana who just stands in the forward line, comes in and does 5 minutes, or you grabbing a guy from another position to fill in for the ruck. That was their point of difference. Two legitimate ruckmen, and the difference is Paddy Ryder against. When you look at the Bulldogs, what they could do in the centre bounce with Paddy Ryder. Like, because he can legitimately get over the top. He can push the ball forward. He can push it to those forward hits. As soon as they get that going, they start knocking them laterally or pulling them back where the players have got space. Whereas Marshall, not yet. It doesn't quite have that capability. They tend to go to a hit zone where they just outnumber an area in the circle and they try and hit 2-1. So it's a bit of point of difference that they lost there. But they also, we touched on this a little bit and just continuing on with the Saints chat, is just fundamentals hurt them at the key times. You think about when they had a couple of minute patch, I think it was the third quarter when they were going to the right of screen. You know, they switch the ball out of defence, they get going really quick. Dean Kemp, wheels onto his left foot, has Billings charging towards the goal square and he kicks the ball along the ground. Now, when you're playing big finals like that, you've just got to execute the fundamentals, and that's where the pressure comes from to put on to Richmond. But you're right, Ramit. Richmond put the pressure on, which then forces those errors, which are routine, like Dean Ken wheeling onto his left foot to kick someone wide open inside forward 50. But the ball, he kicks it all the way along the ground. Like, that's just pressure.
The other part with Ryder not playing, what it caused is forward of the ball a real issue. So the stoppages we touched on. But then if you look at the intercept possessions for Richmond, so Caulfield was the leader in the game. He had 9 intercepts, and he was terrific again, Caulfield. Mm-hmm. Top 5 in their best and fairest as well, by the way, last night. So he had a terrific year. But then you look at the next lot of players. Vlosten 6, Grimes 6, Baker 6, Hawley 6, Broad 6. All defenders. So the ball going inside forward 50 without having Marshall or Ryder there, because Marshall had to ruck, obviously, one out for the entire game. It was easy pickings for Richmond's defence. Really, really easy pickings.
And there's sort of an extra layer to that as well, I reckon, with St Kilda forward of the ball. They kicked 6 goals, 13. They missed a lot of clutch shots, and they also dropped a few important marks inside 50 at important times. And if you reference back to that game against West Coast, where they needed to win that to guarantee them spot in the finals, which is their second last game, they kicked 6-14 that night as well. And it's that same thing, I reckon, about, and that's why I was a bit unsure about St Kilda, was their ability to get the job done under pressure. Now, I know they've come from a long way back, but I reckon forward of the ball, they could still do some tinkering to their list to make them a bit better.
You just listed a couple of fundamentals of the game again, Waddy. Goal kicking,
yeah.
Marking the ball.
So does that come from more experienced guys of being in those moments on a more regular basis, or does it actually mean that they've got to just change it up a little bit, potentially?
No, experience helps. Experience definitely helps.
Got to live it to learn it.
Yep.
And they've lived a bit like Brisbane did last year. They rectified a few things in their first final against Richmond as well.
No, that's a good call.
You got to live it to learn it, I reckon. I'm a big believer in that philosophy in just about anything. The first time you do it, you'll never be as good as... Well, rarely would you be as good as the second time, third time, fourth time. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you are, the more you understand those moments and what they are, and you get better. And especially when you're dealing with a collective. It's not just one player. You're not playing tennis.
No.
You're dealing with 22 humans who are very, very different, who have different levels of anxiety and experience and capability of dealing with all that, Rammer. And it's the art of a great team. It's why we admire great teams, because all that coming together is a very, very special thing.
I agree with what you're saying, Half, about living it to learn it. But the fundamentals that Jim talking about, they're ingrained in you for it. You should have dropped marks like that. And I get the pressure, and there's a little bit of dew and all that sort of stuff. But that needs to be a footballer's bread and butter.
But the moments, remember, it's the expectation, it's the weight of the outcome. Whereas round 16, it doesn't matter. Like, you drop that mark and you lose a game, it doesn't matter, effectively. But if you drop a semi-final mark, and you do, it's all over.
I'm talking about though, doing the fundamentals day in, day out, week in, week out, so you get to those moments in a final and you don't fail at them. Like, you look at, for example, okay, you go to Saturday night, Darcy Cameron drops that simple chest mark in the forward pocket. Like, that's day in, day out stuff. That's not a moment. That's what you've got to live as a footballer, to do that every single day. You're a professional. You don't drop those, Jim.
Yeah, but that's the what separates just the good and average players to the best players. And it's not a special formula or things like that. There's a reason why, Gary Ablett and Joel Selwood and these sort of guys, Scott Pendlebury in particular, they just are so sound with their fundamentals. They don't fumble. They don't drop marks. The one who's a bugbear of mine, and this is, almost like an old footy coach within me, handballs behind players that doesn't, where they have to stop and come back, or the devaluing of a handball, which goes straight into the ground. As soon as you handball into the ground, you just invite the pressure. It's that getting back off the mark. The amount of times I see players who just stand there and the man on the mark's a metre away, and they wonder why they kick it up a chimney. Like, all that sort of stuff.
Do you think Rama, just with St Kilda, I probably shouldn't ask you. Actually, I'll ask Jimmy this question. If you put Ben Brown in St Kilda's forward line, and then all of a sudden you've got a scenario where Membry's taking the second defender, King's taking the third, does that make it a better-looking St Kilda forward line? And those players play, it makes it easier for them to play their role rather than them be one and two?
It means King has to play a little bit out further, which is okay, and Membry has to play out a little bit further.
Which I think suits both of them.
Yeah, which also means, can Ben Brown find the space without having to work over his opponent? So Ben Brown goes on these long searching leads and he turns them around, gets back to the goal square. Look, it can work. It just depends on ball movement up forward and also what you've got around. Because then if you've got King and Brown, and Membry's okay at ground level, you really need some dynamic players around them, don't you? It can
work.
Which
they've got.
Yeah, it can work.
Don't know if I want that lineup. I'm not sure. It might be a bit cumbersome.
I'm not 100% on it, but it can work, definitely.
I think there's a better fit. I think there's a better fit for Ben than the Saints at the moment.
I'm probably asking that with King. I mean, he's so young. Does he need more support? Is he ready to be that main man in a final to kick five goals? Or is he... Or four goals? Or is he... Would Ben Brown help King be a better player?
I think you need a bit more of a bullocking key poster than the Ben Brown style.
I think Ben gets himself in situations where you kick it to him. I just think it looked like he looked like a 19, 20-year-old body. That's the only thing that cost him. It wasn't the fact that he wasn't going at the contest. He wasn't making his way into it. It was hands on the footy and just by his pure not being as mature or physical as his direct opponent who the last second was able to get a spoil in. I think you add another pre-season onto him. Some of those drop balls end up being marks because he doesn't get his arms chopped or just nudged at the right time.
Let's have a look at the Tigers, the winners. 52 inside 50s, I think it was, Rama, for the Tigers. You're not going to lose too many games if you're Richmond and getting that number of inside 50s because they get in there with real speed. That's one of the things about the Tigers. Their numbers in that area aren't necessarily always massive, but they're efficient. And we knew pretty early doors that it was going to be a big night. Tom Lynch ends up kicking 2-5. He could have kicked whatever he could have kicked and really blown the game to pieces. He was a huge presence in that area of the ground. But Asher Hawley, your man for the Friday face-off, was outstanding. Dusty, Sean Edwards, Shane Edwards. I mean, McIntosh kicked the goal again as that floating offside winger. Just a really impressive, it was almost powerful performance from Richmond on Friday night.
I thought the one in the first quarter was Shea Bolton. Just his two goals in that first quarter just opened the game. His second goal was out of his backside. So, I could have believed that. How he was able to crumb it off the pack, basically juggle it in his hands, and then slap it on the right boot for a check side goal. That opened the game. That was a really late one. Shane Edwards, you mentioned, you know, his underground kick to a goal. I was sort of thinking last week watching him against Brisbane, I just thought, you know, the undisciplined play that they had, you know, giving away 50-metre penalties, so many free kicks. You sort of thought, this is... Yeah, Richmond play on the edge, but are they going a little bit too far here? But I thought Friday night, they looked every bit like they can win it. I don't think they go now to Port Adelaide with any fears. You look when they played Port Adelaide last time, everyone calls it the game of the year. It was a super game. Port win by 21 points, but Port Adelaide smashed them in every statistical area in that game. Richmond obviously had some personnel out. I know Port Adelaide had some personnel out, but Friday night they played a game where they just didn't allow the opposition any chance to win that game. Whitey mentioned St Kilda had a little small period in that third quarter where they slightly pushed, but I thought it was a clinical final performance as I've seen in a long time from the Tigers.
Well, until the next 24 hours, of course.
Yeah.
From the Tigers, yeah, fair enough.
Rama and Jimmy have both played in dominant teams. are there any times where you aren't not necessarily searching for motivation, but you almost maybe get a bit bored or get a bit complacent? Because that performance against Brisbane looked like a team that needed a slap around the chops, and we talked about that being the case before the game was played, and then they played like a team that was much more focused, a lot sharper against St Kilda. Was it as simple as that? I'm not saying they needed the loss, but just to sharpen them up a bit?
No, I don't think they needed the loss. Sometimes you can be a little bit off and flat, and it can look like you're a little bit lethargic in your performance. But they've had sort of personnel come in and out as well throughout the side, and sometimes just getting that little bit of connection back. Brisbane were absolutely super. They had the intensity. They were playing the home final, home crowd. They had just that little bit of extra zip about them. But Richmond were still up in it to their eyeballs. You know, the Shea Bolton one, you know, where he bananaed from the pocket. If that goes through, you'd actually think, well, geez, I think Richmond might get home here because of all the momentum was going their way. So, now, I don't think it was boredom or things like that. I know being part of my Cat side, and Rammer would have been the same with that dominant Essence side, it's actually the opposite. You get this motivation that you actually want to crush an opposition. There's nothing greater than just knowing you actually, it sounds brutal, but that's the mindset you have, is I absolutely want to destroy this club. Like, and this might sound really, really bad. I hope people get sacked from that club because we beat them so badly. Like, you've got that pure... Like, I'm trying to put you in the mind of that intensity of, I just want this to turn into a recurring nightmare. So every single time they play the Cats, they're going, oh, geez, not again. Like, you've already got them a little bit on the back foot next time you play them.
Well, the killer mentality coming out
in the late great Bailey will be sitting up in heaven at the moment, sort of... Well, just laughing at you, Jim, at the moment. But we got complacent once.
Sorry, can I answer? I reckon there was probably 3 years in a row where Melbourne came down to Cadinia Park and they went home with a staff member less.
Yeah. Brutal.
That's fair. Now, Half, we got complacent once in finals campaigns. It was against what we thought was a rubbish Hawthorn team in 2001, and they nearly got over the line.
Rammer, did they have those that check jumper and half of the airplane?
We're into a break. Was he up a goal post? 29-8. Great to have Jimmy sometimes, and we might turn his mic off very shortly. Very shortly. By the way, Rammer, the last clinical performance from the Tigers. It's a grand final last year, you goose. Yeah. Not that hard to remember. 29-8. Back with more shortly.
Victoria's Own Breakfast Club.
I think the first part of your question, were we undersold? The honest answer is, I don't know. I mean, I just don't live in that world. And I hope I'm not being disrespectful by saying that. I can't think of a nice way to say that I don't really care.
It's pretty straightforward feedback from Chris Scott. I don't really care.
What do you think?
I just go about my job and just go winning semi-finals. Chris Scott after the game, after the big win over the Magpies. It's great to have Jimmy Bartel with us on a Monday morning.
The best one was Zach Tua yesterday on one of the footy shows. And they're talking, I think they asked him the question about does the criticism get into the four walls? And Zach's response was, people must have an inflated opinion of themselves if they think their opinions can get into the four walls of our club. So it was a very, wow, very good answer.
Yeah, I like that from Chris Scott. That was a bit of, was it Talladega Nights, Ricky Bobby? But I said with all due respect, you're an idiot. But I said with all due respect, the great disclaimer.
We'll talk more about that very, 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 very shortly. Why do you just want to mention the MRO situation from the weekend?
Yeah, I did. And I just want to sort of say, there's something the AFL have done really well in recent times, and that is that they get those the findings of incidents on the field done really quickly, yes, which I think is a really good thing. I think there was, in my view, some real nonsense around the Tom Lynch incident, that he was potentially going to be suspended for a preliminary final and this needed to happen and that needed to happen. Clearly, it was going to be a fine. And the fact that we're able to get that sorted out really quickly, rather than being a situation that it was going to dominate Sunday, dominate Monday before we get to a Monday late afternoon before we had a penalty handed down. The fact that we could get it done with really quickly, Chriso made the right decision there. Yeah, it was a silly thing to do. He's been fined for it. Let's move on. I think having that decision made really early the way it is now and made public is a very good thing. We can actually concentrate on the footy.
Yep, takes a lot of the heat out of the conversation, no doubt, up until that Monday afternoon where Jimmy used to get involved and have free lunches at AFL House and come up with those ridiculous outcomes that he used to come up with in the MRP. Anyway, doing great things. Great to have him with us. Now, Taylor Adam, I want to take you back. I want to take you back to last Tuesday or Wednesday, was it, Joey? When was Tuesday?
Thursday
it was. How am I going? Anyway, it's one of the days of the week last week. He joined us, Taylor Adams, as he normally does in the Inner Sanctum. And this is on the back of a question from Whitey about what can Collingwood fans expect in the opening minutes on Saturday night. Just upon reflection, listen to this and see how accurate he was.
We've always been a contested ball, high-pressure side. And that is the cornerstone of what we try to do every week. You know, if we're doing that, we feel like we're going to give ourselves a chance in the game. So, a team like Geelong, I think we're 1-2 in terms of contested possessions. So, to have the heat around the ball, to be able to win our fair share and own some territory is what we're going to be trying to do early in the game.
So the contested ball was the key for them. Let's just go to the stats. Plus 22 to the Cats. And in the early part of the game, it was an absolute whitewash. And the pressure, which he spoke about, which is one of the hallmarks of the Magpies, high-pressure team, he said that. I think the second and third quarters were the two of the lowest scoring pressure rankings. I don't know where they get it from, but the pressure rankings for the year. So I heard yesterday. So they were just blown off the park. From very, very early doors, Rami, you said it before yourself. It was basically over within 10 minutes, that contest, and we all knew it.
it was a shocker. Look, there's no other way to put it for Collingwood. It was just a shocker. They had 200 possessions for the game. For the game, Geelong had 358. Like, it was...
132 marks Geelong took.
Oh, like, it was what Geelong used to do. I think Geelong had 500 possessions one day down at Cadinia Park, and I think the opposition had about 300. That's what it felt like. It felt like Geelong of old, the way they just dominated. But they simply couldn't win the ball back, Collingwood.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that. You mentioned the marks half. It was just flicking around wherever they wanted. Where Geelong wanted to put the ball, they could. There was a hole there, or there was a hole for the next spot. There was a hole for the next spot. You know, they dominated then... around contest, inside, they only had 46 inside 50s. I don't know what to say. You look at the week before with Collingwood and how good they were and how passionate they were, and then that's what they served up. Like, Sam had a go at me earlier this morning, and it was fair enough. It just simply was an un-Collingwood-like performance.
We talked about this last week, though, and... you know, I just thought it was overplayed, Collingwood's win against West Coast, about being one of the most famous Collingwood wins, and Collingwood legends had said that. But West Coast were underdone going into that game, and I think maybe Collingwood played their final, if you like, that, you know, 2 days less rest, coming off such a big win, they just didn't seem to have the energy to be able to go with Geelong and get the ball back off them. They just had no petrol left in the tank.
It's amazing what happens with your energy levels when you're 54 points down at half time. They weren't good enough. They weren't good enough. They got bashed by a really professional, polished, aggressive team. They smacked them around the ball, and then Jimmy picked up something. Just want to jump in. But Jimmy picked up something early in the game about their style of ball movement. Jim, we're working on Saturday night doing this game. Just want to go over that again. That was really insightful, I thought. And he mentioned this before the start of the game, and within the first 3 seconds, literally 3 seconds, he knew exactly what Geelong were going to do.
Yeah, it was the forward handball. Like, when, you know, the teams sort of line up for, you know, the national anthem, and the coach stands right next to the captain, while they're just sort of waiting for everyone to get in their places, Chris Scott and just goes to Joel Selwood, makes the handballing motion, and you could just see his lips go, just get it forward. Get it forward. So, I've heard this from Chris Scott before, you know, playing under him. just take the contest. When you feel the pressure, take the contest forward. Don't take it back because you invite more pressure. And the way Collingwood defend, they come forward hard and they get up in your face and you just keep inviting more and more pressure. And half, what happened in the very first centre bounce, Mitch Duncan?
It's the 30-metre handball.
Just bang, take it forward. That's just under instruction. We know players are literal. But then it ended up unfolding more and more. So the Collingwood defence had to keep coming up, keep coming up. They could never get set. They could never peel off and help out. But then what that led to is, and it was an improvement from Geelong, is that when they had the footy from that kick mark style of footy, it was almost a 2-second rule or 3-second rule. Get it, move it. You can go backwards, you can go sideways, anyway, but just move it. So all Collingwood did was run up and man the mark, run up and man the mark. You've got no energy. And what they, behind the goals footage, you could see that Geelong made the ground. They talk about getting width, or Geelong's term is fight for the outside. So as soon as you win the ball, you're trying to be the first ones on the outside towards the boundary. Now, it sounds strange, but Geelong do that to get you up through the middle. Because what they're asking is, say, half, you're my direct opponent. We're standing sort of in the centre square. Stewart wins it back at centre-half back. I'm fighting for the outside. So I run really hard towards the interchange. So we're just trying to use some visual cues here. You follow me. By you following me, you open up this massive amount of space behind me. But they're so disciplined that everybody's doing. So you stretch the ground, the whole entire Collingwood defence is stretched. Now what happens is, if you don't follow me, I get used and we just take the ground. If you do follow me, they rely on the fact that not everyone from Collingwood is going to be following their direct opponent, and space just opens up. And you just knock it around, space opens up. But also what that allows them to do is, okay, if we've got nothing, we kick it into a contest. Collingwood aren't set up for then the counter-attack, because they're all stretched wide looking for their direct opponent. So that's what they do really well, Geelong. It was discipline. That's why you saw Mitch Duncan, who could have probably turned around to the property steward and go, you could probably use that again next week. Like, there's no grass. No one went near me tonight. I had 30 metres of space. It was like training. I was trying to find a forward, inside forward 50 or not.
It was a clinic. Yeah, it was an absolute clinic from the very start.
And the thing was, my point about before, about the 2 days less rest, the game was done pretty much 20 minutes into the game. Geelong kicked the first three goals. They then, Jamie Elliott sort of out of nowhere got a goal from a stoppage. Geelong then got the goal straight again. The statistics were just blowing up after 20 minutes. Collingwood were never going to be able to come back from that point, and Geelong owned them.
And I just jump in there. People who then say it's about Collingwood players, oh, they weren't trying or anything like that. I didn't see that. They kept trying to crack in. I saw Taylor Adams, Treloar, Pendlebury, these guys. But the problem was their system and method just got blown up by Geelong. And Reece Stanley plays pretty good against Brody Grundy because he's got the athleticism to go with him. And then the issue is, because they're shorter quarters, Reece goes hard for the first 10 to 12 minutes. Then Mark Blitzhalves comes in and just keeps running him. And then he has a rest. And then Stanley comes back in, and then it's quarter time. So Geelong actually have a pretty good system to counteract what Brody Grundy does.
So this is the point, and this is the question I want to ask all of you then. The Collingwood system got blown up in a final. Now, if we look back in just recent history, Melbourne didn't come back, haven't been able to come back from that massive finals loss to West Coast. The Giants, they haven't been able to come back from their grand final loss where they got blown up in the big stage. And now we look at Collingwood. Are they going to be a club that are going to struggle to come back from this, like recent history suggests, or are they good enough to be able to respond strongly from that, or have they been exposed for what they don't have based on what we saw against the Cats?
Well, that was my question at the very start. Do you actually assess this game and look at it as a style, or is it a personnel issue, Rammer?
Well, but they've been holding on for a while, Collingwood. You know, I thought that maybe just towards the end that they'd recaptured some of that form that we saw from them at the very start of the year, but they have just been clinging on. What happens to Collingwood from here?
Look, I'm still a believer in the Pies. I think you talk about their style, Whitey and Jim. They never got a chance to play anywhere near their style of play on Saturday night. It's because of the dominance of Geelong, I think. But again, and people will go, this is an excuse. But this is a reason as well. You throw side bottom and Howe back into that side, it looks very different. It looks very, very different. They're two super important. That's two of your top five players. You take two of your top five players out of any team, and it makes it very, very difficult to win. I think their best is always been very good. Those mid forwards that you talk, those mid-size forwards that you talk about, Whitey, Jim, and Half. They just didn't get a return out of them this year.
That happens a lot for the Magpies when things are under the pump. So that system needs to change, I think. Yeah. They need to find a key poster who's going to really influence a game. Those hybrids aren't impacting anywhere near what they need to.
But that's the mix they need to change now.
But we said this about Collingwood all year. In their grand final year, they moved the ball quickly and gave those mid forwards an opportunity. And that hadn't happened all year this year.
They got zero out of those guys this year. There's no real impact. There's no what the other part of that is. Okay, there's no impact on the scoreboard from those mid-sized players, but there's no impact from a pressure point of view.
Yeah,
and that's the problem. Like if those guys aren't impacting on the scoreboard, they've got to impact defensively. So if you watch, the ball comes out of Collingwood's forward half of the ground really easy. Really, really easy. Just not enough. There's not enough pressure coming out of their forward line, Collingwood. So, those forward half turnovers, I think, is something they need to absolutely focus on. Because when they're moving the ball, they look terrific. They look as good as any team. But when they lose the ball and turn it back over, a lot of the time they can't win it back quick enough. And that was so evident on Saturday night.
A bit more attacking flair for mine is what I'd like to see from the Magpies going forward, just to change things up a bit.
Guys, how much had to do with Brody Grundy's year not being the year it had been and giving Collingwood a bit better use around stoppage and all that sort of thing? You know, did that have a big impact, do you think, on Collingwood's season, that he wasn't what he was the 2 years previous?
Yeah, I kind of like, look, he wasn't his All-Australian dominant top 10 in the competition record, but he's still pretty good. And I find we do this a bit with the very, very good players, that we set the bar incredibly high. Go through his numbers for a ruckman. I think he's second in, fourth in all the key areas, like, hit outs, all that sort of stuff. But Collingwood need to work their system out a bit, because we again can see Brody Grundy can have 50 hit outs and they lose clearances by 15. You can't have that discrepancy where you're actually getting your hand on the ball but you're getting belted in the clearances too often. And they probably need to learn how to score out of them a bit better as well.
So they're number one in the league, Jim, in the home and away season for average hit-outs, the Magpies.
Yes.
And number 12 for clearances.
Yeah, that's just too big.
That's averages. And then you got your against opponents. From a hit-outs perspective, they were number one again. And then clearances, this is average just against opponents every week. Yes. The number changes. They were 12th again. So 1 and 12 in both of those categories.
Yeah, so, that's a massive gulf.
My personal opinion is just watching the game. I don't know if this is... Grundy looks sore in the back part of the season. Yeah. And what happened is, as soon as he looked sore, he lost his follow-up. What separates him as a ruckman is his follow-up at ground level. He joins in and almost becomes another midfielder. And that's what stopped for Brody in the back half of the season.
Yeah.
Great call, Rama. Because he would get 20 possessions often
absolutely
as a player, and he's back down to 6 to 8 a game. And
he'd be 4 or 5 clearances himself.
Yes.
Or is it just Collingwood aren't good enough to be a top 4 team?
No, they finished where they finished.
Yeah.
And I know they had injuries.
I reckon they were good enough to win the Premiership this year, and you can't always win it.
But isn't that discussion moving forward, Half? Where are they for the next 2 years? If they're not good enough now, and if they lose Dugowie, it's debatable how good Dugowie is, but it's debatable whether he stays or goes.
Well, we'll talk about this after the break.
Yeah, where are Collingwood? What do they have to do? Do they keep serving up the same, or do they have to dramatically change?
No, well, I'll have to change something, because they're not top four. The top four are clearly the standouts, and we've seen that through the season. That's why we've got the top four teams playing off in preliminary finals, the Lions and the Cats. on Saturday night and Power and Tigers on Friday night. It's going to be an absolute ball-bursting weekend, the best weekend of the footy year is preliminary final weekend. We'll come back and talk more about the bigger issues in footy, or the broader issues, not the bigger issues, the broader issues in footy after this on The Breakfast Club.
Across this sporting state, RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
Geordie loves the club and he wants to be here. Elements of people on his side would like to see him remunerated as well as he possibly could, and you know, and we want him to be rewarded appropriately as well, as we do, you know, the other 44 blokes on our list for what they bring to the table. So I think that's what it comes down to. There still needs to be a monetary outcome that's satisfactory for both parties.
That is Nathan Buckley, coach of the Magpies, talking about Jordan DeGoey after the game. He had a far-reaching press conference, almost as we get a chance to chat to him one more time for the next 3 months. And he, journos asked him everything they could, and he answered as openly and as honestly as he could, talking about the monetary outcome that seemingly Jordan and his camp, well, I think his dad manages him. Is that not right,
yeah.
Rammer?
Yeah.
His dad manages him. He loves the club, but there needs to be a monetary outcome for Jordan DeGoey. What's he worth? What's the difference? What's the difference between going and staying in terms of a dollar value, Rami? You're probably best placed to talk about these things. How much does it take to get players out? How much extra?
Good question.
Well, but there's a lot of factors that come into that. Are they happy at the club? Are they unhappy at the club?
Just answer the question, manager boy.
You can't answer that question.
Nathan just said he loves the club.
Oh, if he loves the club, then it's got to be significant. It will be probably, I imagine, 100,000 plus a year, more, 200,000 plus.
Hang on, 100,000. So by the time the tax man takes his clip and Rammer takes his clip,
oh, stop it, Rammer.
So 100 grand's what? An extra 50 60? Grand to move clubs? 60? Oh,
45.
He's getting paid that.
55.
He's getting 48 cents in the dollar taken off. Rammer takes another, 10 cents in the dollar off? No, so half of it comes back to you?
Let's not beat around the bush here. Nathan Buckley was speaking like Jordan DeGoey is not playing at Collingwood next year. That's what it seemed like to me, that there was a bit of resignation to the fact that Collingwood have got their own, I wouldn't say they've got their own cap issues, but they're trying to keep a lot of really good players as well. And if Jordan's going to come in and say, pay me what I'm worth, well, that means he's going to be playing at another club. That's just the reality of the way things are done these days. And there are clubs that are going to offer massive overs to get him on what's possible as opposed to what he's done.
But you just touched on it there. I think that's the argument. It's Collingwood paying him what he's worth. Collingwood are going to pay him what he's worth. He wants to get paid what he thinks he's worth.
Correct. And there will
be not necessarily true.
There's a big difference in that sometimes applies.
But that's not necessarily true, because if someone's prepared to pay you, say, what he's worth, Jim, then that is his market rate. That's not his value. That's the worth of another club. So that's the value that somebody else puts on him. It's not his number. It's somebody else's number.
Yeah, but wouldn't you think that the club that he's currently at would be close to knowing what his worth is?
Well, no, but I'm not necessarily sure that's the case, because of the way that their list is structured, where they are in the window, all that sort of stuff. And you've been through this time, or your time at Geelong, where I'm sure you played for unders, Jim. You could have got another 300 or 400 grand somewhere else, being a Brownlow medalist, Norm Smith medalist, all that sort of stuff. That somebody had to come to you and said, Jim, we want to give you 5 years at 1.2. And you said, no, I'm pretty happy with the Cats. I like.
Would have taken that.
Yeah, you probably would have taken that. 5 years at 900.
Just joking.
But your teammates chose success and a dynasty to be a part of, as opposed to an extra 100,000 bucks a year for 3 years, whatever it might have been.
But your point's correct, Half, that you're only worth what somebody's willing to pay you.
That's right.
So, that's just how market forces work in this game. So everybody's got the same salary cap.
And that's what I'm saying. Collingwood has established his worth. And it sounded like there that he was after a monetary value, as Buckley pointed. So they clearly are poles apart then with what they think each other's worth.
So, okay, I won't ask Rammer this because you can't ask him this. What's he worth?
What?
Well, you can answer if he wants to.
He's probably best placed.
What, yeah, well, he is. What's he worth?
Can we play the hot cold game?
But seriously, what's he worth and what will he get? What's the difference? Because, I mean, my gut feeling, I'll go on the table. I reckon he's a $500,000 to $600,000 player. But I reckon someone will pay $800,000 to $900,000.
No, yeah. I reckon you get $800,000 to $900,000. I reckon you get $750,000 maybe. He's an enigmatic match winner is what he is. He kicked 19 goals for the year in 11 games. Kicked 9 of those in 2 of those. In two. West Coast and Gold Coast. And he kicked back-to-back Geelong. Weeks. He kicked 5 and 4.
Geelong.
Sorry, Geelong was over in Perth. Wasn't
Geelong
he?
At
Sorry.
West Coast, Yeah.
So, look, I reckon he gets $750,000. Any more than that, he's doing a hell of a job. Because, of, as you say, Whitey, there's nothing consistent about him, but he is a match winner, and you pay a price for match winners.
People will pay overs for what he can do as opposed to what he's done. That will be what will happen with someone like him. The history of this goes on, and whether it's a Carlton or a St Kilda or someone like that, they'll offer the money, and he'll go.
He's a point of difference for the Blues. I like him in the lineup at the Blues. He's a point of difference. They don't have that style of player in the forward half of the ground. If I was the Blues, I'd be making a play. If he's talking about getting out or open to getting out, I'd be making a play if I was the Blues.
Everyone seems to want to go to Carlton.
Why wouldn't you? Hey, we're doing great things there at the Blues in all parts of the program.
Will you have to change your car park if they get sort of three or four in, you know?
Well, I could be a bit further down the line, I think, the way things are going.
Do you have to give up the coffee cart?
No, I get 20% off still at the merchandise store. Don't worry about that. I'm milking that too at the moment. Milking that hard.
It just seems that Carlton are going all in for the now, aren't they? Which is great. Good on them. You know, they've missed the finals for a long time. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, they feel that they're ready to make this big play.
The supporters deserve that. They've been stuck on a five-year plan for 15 years.
Longer, 20 years.
Like, seriously.
That's a good point.
Yeah, they do deserve it, though, the supporters. They've been promised plans, and they've had restarted plans, and they've had restarts of lists and things like that. They probably deserve it, at least a run at it.
Yep, that's a good point, Jim. That's a good point. Carlton fans have been nodding their head in approval of that this morning. Rama, question off the SMS from David in Port Melbourne. Is it embarrassing that Jordan DeGoey's dad will get him a better deal than you could?
It's
just a question.
What's his rate, though?
You know what, half? Time will tell.
What dad's cut is.
Why? but just to that, why are you happy for me to do your contract then, half?
That's a good question. I'm thinking about moving. I'm going to get Jordan DeGoey's dad on the line and sort out the next one. Don't worry about that. Hey, Jim.
The deal should be done by then.
We've run out of time, Jim, but it's always great to chat to you. Cannot wait to talk to you after the prelim action on the weekend and building up to a big grand final in 2020. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Good chat.
You're a good man. Jimmy Bartel, triple premiership player, Brownlow medalist, Norm Smith medalist, and our Monday morning specialist. Following the AFL footy weekend. We'll get to the news. Johnny Bowden's got the latest. We'll change tack after this with Chris Rogers about to join us from the Victorian cricket team. The new coach. See how he's going in quarantine and getting ready for the start of the Victorian Sheffield Shield season.